Peter Galbert, North Bennett Street School, Shop Hero. When I first visited with Gary Knox Bennett, whom you'll hear more about later on, I was sitting at his kitchen table with him and his champion of a bride, Sylvia. I was describing my plans for this very book, and I mentioned that I wanted to meet Peter Galbert, the chairmaker. Gary raised one eyebrow and pointed 4 feet to my left, where a gorgeous two-person Windsor settee sat. "He made that," Gary said. "I just got it at the furniture show. I don't even know him. I just thought it was such a beautiful piece." Then, some months later, when I was in Maine interviewing Chris Bexvoort, Chris and I visited Lee Nielsen Tool Works, and there in the showroom, the most charismatic toy store in the nation, sat two black chairs by Peter Galbert in the fanback Windsor style. They were exquisite. Apparently, great minds think alike, as I've learned from visiting more than a few of them. Well, I am tickled pink to launch into telling you about this Galbert fellow, but before I dive into his deal, I'll back up a step to explain how it is that I came to meet him. As long as I have been reading books and magazines and bathroom graffiti about woodworking, the name of Boston's North Bennett Street School has continued to appear with solid regularity. Woodworker after great woodworker took his or her training there, and the results of that training often look like they should be well on their way to a museum, which is in fact where they're quite often bound. Founded by Pauline Agassiz Shaw in 1881 to give immigrants the necessary skills to seek gainful employment in their new land, the fledgling institute sought to train the whole person, not teaching how to make a living, but how to live. Well, this makes me sit up and say howdy. Who says women can't get into this tool stuff? Here was a woman of wealth and stature using her influence to promote social service, women's rights, and training in hand skills. This philanthropic hero lady started the first 14 kindergartens in Boston and put on demonstrations of their usefulness. As for North Bennett Street, Mrs. Shaw hired a fellow named Gustav Larsson from Sweden's Slöjd School. Slöjd is Swedish for craft or manual skill, to sail over to the States and establish a similar program at her school in Boston. The original Swedish school had been developed because it was felt that, quote, "the general skill level of the population was declining due to the availability of ready-made objects," end quote. This was in the 1880s, gang. I don't know whether to laugh or cry when I consider what those citizens would think of our current level of skills here in America. I was contacted by the dashing president of the school, Miguel Gomez Ibanez, asking me if I would speak at the school's 2015 commencement. As a longtime fan, I was honored to do so, especially when I learned that the ceremony was to occur at Boston's Old North Church of historical fame, one if by land, two if by sea. Once I began to read of the school's history and mission, I realized that this was just the sort of place that could help every American community to regain its footing in craft work. Instead of cutting shop programs and trade skill training, the North Bennett Street School is not only providing its adult students with the means and know-how to make a fulfilling life, but it has also started a pilot program for younger students in Boston's North End. The John Elliott K-8 school has incorporated hand skills training into its curriculum, and the administrators are citing marked improvement in school attendance and performance. That's what I'm talking about. Some of us like hammers better than grammars. The school houses 8 discrete disciplines within: locksmithing, bookbinding, jewelry making and repair, carpentry, preservation carpentry, violin making and repair, piano technology, and of course, cabinet and furniture making. As I toured it, this venerated institution thrilled me like no school I had visited before. The luthiers polishing the final finish on their immaculately stringed instruments, the bookbinders trimming the pages on their one-of-a-kind art books, and especially the furniture students hurriedly scraping a Chippendale chair or waxing a newly built tool cabinet, filled me with an excitement reminiscent of that felt by Laura Ingalls Wilder's sister Mary when she first arrived at the Iowa College for the Blind. Here was a place, I thought, where they could teach me to thrive, despite my being a clumsy white man, a form of blindness. Thankfully, the commencement address came off passably on my part, by which I mean they let me finish my prepared remarks, a gesture that I always take as a compliment. North Bennett Street School has evolved over the years into its current form and curriculum, but it still turns out some of the most highly qualified trade specialists in their various fields of expertise. North Bennett Street also serves as an artistic hub of one of our nation's most historical neighborhoods. It has the particular feeling of a sort of museum, except in this museum, you can enroll in classes to learn how to craft future exhibits for the halls of honor therein. If I had had access to such an august academy in my own youth, it might have saved me from the seductive caresses of showbiz. The work of their furniture program is of particular interest to the woodworker in me, for obvious reasons, but also to the art lover inside my mortal coil. While I fully applaud the creative wood jazz that artists like Gary Knox Bennett are blowing, there is certainly something to be said as well for those woodworkers who are maintaining the lines and forms of traditional masterworks. Unlike the popular philosophy of the capitalist, quantity over quality, more is better, the spirit of this institution inculcates the student body with a rarefied degree of mastery. As President Miguel pointed out to me, if one learns the necessary skills to successfully execute a Queen Anne highboy or a veneered Bombay chest, then one stands a solid chance of making any other damn design that one might please. Depending upon their program of study, full-time students are able to fill 1 to 3 years of their lives with some of the richest training available in the country, in an apprentice-like classroom setting. On top of that, the school offers shorter workshops called continuing education, which are open to enrollment by the public, jerks like me. These are golden opportunities for those of us with full schedules to still get a taste of the goodness at such a sweet learning establishment. It should be easy for you to understand, then, that when I knew I was going to be performing in a play at Boston's Huntington Theater during the last 3 months of 2015, I immediately looked up the school's calendar to see if there would be a workshop that I might attend during my stay. Good gracious, there was only but one, but oh, what a one it was. Windsor Chair Workshop with Peter Galbert, said the catalog. I heard heavenly trumpets in my ears when I read this information, and my eyesight went blurry for a minute, but I shook it off and signed up. There were 8 of us in the class, from all walks of life, but every one of us was a woodworker with some experience. I'll just say right now that this was the first class I've ever taken in woodworking. To my classmates, if they're listening to this, I would say only that I was lying to you about the dust in my eyes and that I was actually just weeping tears of joy. As mentioned earlier, I am self-taught via books and magazines, and so I cannot emphasize this enough. Nothing compares to being in the room with a teacher more experienced than you who is identifying your mistakes and correcting them. Yes, I was crying. I am not ashamed. Let me live, people. From the get-go, Peter Galbert was enthusiastic and engaged, two qualities far too woefully absent in teachers today. He started us off by demonstrating the use of a fro and the large mallet or beetle used to whap the froblade into a log. He began to rive small oak logs, 8 to 12 inches in diameter, into billets of about an inch square, which we then learned to shave with a draw knife, using a shave horse to hold our work. Trust me, unless you're a heartless monster, you would have been crying by this point, too. Some consider the draw knife to be archaic or outdated. Apparently, no one has informed Mr. Galbert of this information, because he wields a draw knife like John Henry swung a hammer, with aplomb. Our teacher is such a proponent of the draw knife that he invented his own sharpening implement, the draw sharp, a simple jig that works like gangbusters and which you can purchase. I did. This was also my first outing working with green wood, and holy cow, is it a gas. Green woodworking simply refers to working with freshly cut wood before it has had a chance to cure or dry, which is why green wood is also referred to as wet. The material is much easier for tooling, like eating a fresh slice of pizza or bread out of the oven versus trying to masticate that stuff after it's been sitting out in the air for a couple days. Green wood is ideal for the parts of traditional chairs, like the ladder back or the Windsor, because of the organic shapes of the spindles and legs. They are all much more easily shaped with shaving tools than by using shop machines. Parts that require bending also behave much better when green wood is used. Peter had his pal, Tim Manny, another sagacious talent, helping us out as we newbies got the hang of these thrilling new, old tools. The two craftsmen specialize in chairs and spoons, which I assume means they love nothing more than soup, and they like to eat it sitting down, which makes a lot of sense. The pair coached us through the learning curves of the subsequent processes, shaving the spindles, shaping the back bow billet before steam bending it into its extremely curved shape, carving the seats with a couple more new tools, a hand adze, and an inshave, also known as a scorp. Every step of this process was so exciting, and it was such a comfort to be receiving the tutelage of this man who was clearly obsessed with the Windsor chair. His focus was evident in the way he had mastered the draw knife to the point that he knew exactly how best to sharpen and maintain its edge for the best performance, like a race car driver knows exactly how to calibrate his or her jalopy. I would be remiss if I did not pass along his most oft, by far, repeated admonition. Skewing and slicing. Effectively using a quick sketch on the dry erase board, he illustrated how a slicing blade, especially if it is skewed, angled to the cut, cuts more cleanly and effectively. Then he threw a thick blank of eastern white pine in a vise and showed us just what he meant. The skill and elan with which he wielded that tool had us all grinning in admiration. Sure, Peter Galbert is talented. Sure, he's smart as all get out. However, he didn't come to be such a gifted draw knifist by being smart and talented. He did it by practicing. In a smart way, and okay, with talent, you got me. But Windsor chairs weren't always his main squeeze, structurally speaking. After attending the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, he earned his BFA in photography at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. We believe we may even have vomited on each other at some point during 1993, the year we shared the campus. After college, he moved to Manhattan and started out like many woodworkers, in a high-end shop, building furniture and cabinetry well and quickly, using a lot of sheet goods and machinery. His dream of masterfully working wood with hand tools seemed awfully far away, as he spent his days encased in the restrictive uniform of eye goggles, earmuffs, and a respirator. I agree with Peter that those implements, worn day in and day out, can quickly make employment in a wood shop feel a lot more like a factory job. He looked around him, puzzled at his dissatisfaction, and can today describe his confusion succinctly, as such. I defined my achievement and skill by my ability to manipulate the wood to fit my will, regardless of its properties. Reaching outside of his experience, Peter began to examine the chair as a possible item of inspiration. After considering different styles from different eras, he settled on the Windsor as a jumping-off point. Not because he was crazy about the look or the period, per se, but because he saw in the Windsor chair just the right framework to allow his creativity to blossom and grow. The nifty thing about any chair is that it has a pretty specific set of requirements to succeed, all based on its function. No matter what it looks like, it must conform to the needs of the human form, as Peter puts it. As he became accustomed to working with green wood and the traditional hand tool techniques for shaping chair parts, he realized he had indeed found his wheelhouse. He said, "After completing my first chair, I realized I had sidestepped all the problems I'd faced when building flat work. I was no longer competing with power tools. They simply didn't meet the requirements of the task. Woodworking was like playing again, and I was sold." I am so grateful that Amelia Earhart found her airplane, Wynton Marsalis his trumpet, J.K. Rowling her wizard, and Peter Galbert his chair. Once he discovered his intense fascination with this form and its inherent tools and techniques, Mr. Galbert was off to the races. He became obsessed in the best way with making this object by hand as efficiently and beautifully as possible, proceeding to experiment with each stage of the construction until he had developed improvements to almost every step. In yet another substantial example of the fellowship practiced by the community of all woodworkers, Peter Galbert prototyped and improved centuries-old chair-making tools with his compatriots Tim Manny and Claire Minahan. I've already enumerated Peter's virtuosity on the draw knife, but there's plenty more where that came from. By narrowing their collective focus to the simple actions of the travisher, a sort of chubby spokeshave for dished or concave surfaces like a chair seat, the reamer, a twisting bladed tool for making accurate tapered conical mortises, and the hand adz, mini adz for the rapid removal of material in carving out the bowl of a chair seat. These woodworkers have damn near reinvented the wheel. Among his other teaching and building responsibilities, Tim also makes reamers and hand adzes for sale. Claire makes travishers, and I can tell you firsthand that the quality of these implements is top-notch. They are the sort of tools that are annoying not to use. You have to hide them, really, because if you see them, they simply command your hands to feel the efficacy coursing through their handsomely crafted hardwoods and brass and steel. All available at petergalbertchairmaker.com. But wait, that's not all. This Peter Galbert guy also invented a super cool caliper for turning. He calls it the Turner's Tape Measure. It uses a spring-loaded indicator to give an accurate reading of your spindle's diameter as you turn. This allows you to hold the Galbert caliper to the far side of your work and simply stop when you have removed the appropriate amount of material to hit your measurement. Ever since he showed it to me, it's been killing me that I can't beat the name Galbert Caliper. The Galbiper, the Caligalper, Galcal. Calipeter Galbert is too dirty. Damn it. I can at least assure you it can be purchased through PayPaliper. Blort. Let me back off for a moment and get some perspective for myself as well as you, my reader. Is Peter Galbert incredibly impressive in the career he has achieved thus far, in his mid-40s, a kid like me? Yes, he does impress. Should I drop everything and start freaking out on Windsor chairs myself? Well, I can't really see the downside. Wait, no. I think I am drawing a bead on the takeaway here. I should not throw my own hard-earned career away to make only beautiful chairs on my shave horse. I should let Peter inspire me in a more abstract way. I should take his example and apply it to everything I do. Instead of blindly accepting tried-and-true methods of work, I should keep my third eye open to the possibility that I might find a brilliant improvement, even if it's, quote, particular to my own circumstance, as the editors of Fine Woodworking have so haughtily repeated every time I've sent in one of my inventions, like the Offerman scribing shuriken. Mark lines accurately whilst defending against attacking ninjas. They obviously don't know dick about Los Angeles. I apologize. I seem to have gotten off my thread. If you want to warm your own bones by the fire that Peter Galbert has lit beneath my fanny, then you are in luck, my friend. This man has crafted one heck of a book called Chairmaker's Notebook. Check out these numbers. About 400 pages in length, containing more than 500 hand-drawn illustrations. They are gorgeous. He can draw like he went to art school and has talent. He is so annoying. Ugh. His book is so good, I told him right to his face that my book was embarrassed to even mention his stupid and humongous and handsome book. He says he stopped counting after 300, but he figures that he's made about 600 chairs so far. I would also ascribe to him the peaceful demeanor of a wise man or woman, of the ilk who has discovered the pleasures to be found in simplicity. Starting his journey in the world of plywood and noise pollution, where methods of crafting concerned themselves primarily with speed and profit, he has wandered by a path less traveled to a place that still affords him a life of profit, but feeds his heart and soul as much as it does his wallet. When he was generously teaching me an extra day, I was the only one of eight to fail the workshop, in his own charming old garage shop, we listened to Nina Simone as he demonstrated the virtue of raking a single light source across a surface whilst one scraped it smooth. He likes to leave the surfaces of his chair parts slightly faceted, an effect hard to spot with the eye, but very pleasantly apparent to the touch. This has the combined result of looking like a museum-quality piece while retaining all the evident charm of being made by hand. Peter Galbert may be teaching less in the years to come, but here's the good news. He is everywhere. There are men and women in your county, I guarantee, that want to help you learn how to use tools to make whatever it is that floats your boat, including boats. Across this fine nation, there remain schools like North Bennett Street, Penland School of Crafts, Arrowmont School of Arts and Crafts, Anderson Ranch Arts Center, Port Townsend School of Woodworking and Preservation Trades, and many more. Just look up schools with words like craft, folk, boat building, or of course, wood in the name. Those of us who know the right secrets to chase might have a chance at the contentment Peter Galbert must feel when he sits in one of his rocking chairs and listens to the music.